Welcome, friends and listeners. Good to have you with us once again. This is Henrik with Red Ice. We're almost back in the groove. We are working on the last few things now to complete the new members' website. It's taken a bit longer than we first expected, as usual, right? It always does. So we just wanted to thank everyone for being patient, staying with us as we get everything in order and set, you know, back in its place before we return to normal procedures, as it were. But today, guys, we are covering the new French Patriot Act that recently was passed, something that really will take Big Brother to the next level in France. And of course, Big Brother is not something which is a right-wing boogeyman, as the leftists tried to say. This is a liberal left-wing nut with globalization and replacement as some of the prime objectives. So our guest that we have with us today is Patrick Lebrun. He is, he's become our de facto expert on all things France, as he's been with us many times to discuss the situation in France and kind of the perimeter of the European countries there. So welcome back, Patrick. Thank you for coming on with us again.
Great. Thanks to be here, and so grateful that Red Ice is still existing despite the horrible and unjust attacks against you guys.
Well, thank you. It was close. It was a close call. Let me tell you. I mean, if they would have executed everything they wanted to, it wouldn't have been that we couldn't start it up again, obviously, but we would have lost our entire archives. We would have lost everything that we've done back to 2006 since we started. We would have been completely wiped out. But thankfully, we had some of our ducks in order. We had some good people behind the scenes helping us out too. So we're very lucky, let me tell you. But we could talk more about that later, Patrick. But I wanted to just read you this to get started and get our listeners kind of in the headspace, if you will, of this new act, the Patriot Act as well. And of course, people should keep in mind, just as the American one passed after 9/11, I believe this will do very much the same thing for the French people as what happened to the American peoples. The government will have capabilities that extends outside of the normal measures. So let me read you this. The new legislation will extend police powers in an attempt to stop a wave of terrorist violence that has claimed 239 lives in France since 2015 alone. As recently as Sunday, a man who the Islamic State later claimed was a soldier of the group fatally stabbed two women at a train station in Marseille, and then on Monday, the police arrested five people in connection to a homemade bomb in Paris, in a Paris apartment building. Since the day after the terrorist attack that killed 130 people in Paris, this is in November 2015, France has been under an official, quote, state of emergency. This is a temporary regime of heightened security measures that have given local police and administrative authorities heightened powers to arrest and detain suspects without judicial oversight. So the anti-terrorism law approved Tuesday last week will make, you know, many of these special provisions actually remain permanent. And under the new legislation, French police will be able to conduct home searches and place suspects under house arrest with limited involvement by the courts. The law will enshrine a version of stop and frisk policing, and local authorities will be empowered to close, quote, places of worship in which are disseminating the writings, ideas, or theories that provoke violence, hatred, and discrimination, unquote. So most headlines, Patrick, that I've read have showed, of course, sympathy and worry about what's going to happen to the Muslims living in France under this law. But the reality is that this law can and most likely will be used on an equal basis on all political fronts in France, if not even maybe more, against those dissenting voices that are against the imposed morality by the liberal world order, those that are, you know, leaning more right and those who are truly concerned with the great replacement and how France is actually developing right now. So I think, as usual, Patrick, they brought in the Muslims. They've used them as an excuse to clamp down legally, and now the legal measures that are in place can go after anyone which the government considers provoke violence and hatred and discrimination. So I think this is absolutely horrible. But what's your analysis of what this new act is about?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's the problem that the French people are in, is that, and the French state, is that there is a very serious threat. And this serious threat is coming from this Salafist, Wahhabist form of Islam that is lashing out violently against the West. Now, from the point of view of the oligarchy that is unelected, their threat is not coming so much from them, but is coming from nationalists who want to take back the reins of power, take back sovereignty for their country, and put the power over the destiny of each country into the hands of its citizens. That's what the oligarchy is afraid of. So President Macron of France, he is someone who's brand new on the scene, who has very light political experience, who's not built up a base of support. His amongst the people or amongst a certain group that he's helped out, say, you know, politicians typically will build up loyalty in a region or do some kinds of services and prove themselves. He's only proven himself as someone who's capable of asset stripping the crown jewels of the French industrial economy to the benefit of these bankers and cosmopolitan elite, yeah. And to the conforming to the tastes of this heavily Jewish oligarchy, people like Jacques Attali, people like Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who, had he not been unable to resist the desire to rape a maid in a New York hotel, he would have probably been president instead of François Hollande.
Just another Weinstein. So, you know,
another one, and exactly. This is the week that Harvey Weinstein, everything's crashing down around him. Yeah. I mean, this is not it's not an unusual thing, sadly, that this is really a cultural trait, and that when we see these guys get into positions of power, they abuse that position.
Yeah, definitely.
Egregiously. Despite their public positions on issues and claims to be friends of women, friends of humanity. But he's has his power thanks to the people who put him there, which is this oligarchy, these international bankers, this Jewish elite. And so when he's passing these laws, whether it's the labor law, which I recently covered on a podcast on Countercurrents with Greg Johnson, the day that this Marseille attack occurred, or it's this anti-terrorism law. And the anti-terrorism law is... Well, I think what we'll do is I'll kind of give a technical look at what he's passed. I'll look at what's been removed, why the center right and the nationalist right are opposed to it, why the far left has been opposed to it, and then maybe look at the impacts it will have and their motivations, both in terms of the fight against radical Islam and also. In terms of their battle against nationalists in Europe. One of the things that I think this really goes much further than the Patriot Act, in that, you know, the Patriot Act, as far as I know, doesn't set up what are called perimeters of protection. So, for example, around public events, and this is very broadly defined, whether it's the protests, like we've seen in the streets with the unions protesting labor law, whether it's a concert, whether it's a public market, you know, these are all public events where the people gather. That falls under this law, and they're allowed to make perimeters of protection around these, in which basically basic civil liberties don't apply. Now, I totally understand how, say, around a stadium, you want to check people to make sure that they're not bringing in weapons or bombs. You know, that's very normal. And also, it's very reasonable to say, like, okay, if you're at the checkpoint and you're a police officer or a security officer, and you're looking at a guy who's 20 meters away, who's staring at you, talking on a walkie-talkie, looking at who goes in, acting weird, I think that it's totally normal to say that the security officer should have the right to be able to go to that person and engage that individual, right, who's acting suspiciously.
Of course.
And that's included in this law, and I think that's a good thing. Now, some of the things that are odd about this is that any kind of public event, this perimeter of protection around it actually extends a month in advance to when it takes place. And there are also perimeters that are put around the borders, naturally, but also anywhere where you are within 20 kilometers of a port, an airport, or a railroad station. So, I mean, unless you're all alone with the goats in the mountains of of Aldesh, you know, I think you're pretty much going to fall into these, in one of these perimeters of protection.
Huh.
And now that, which includes ID control. Okay, so ID control, that sounds fine. But then when you dig deeper, you see that ID control actually can take, it's a process that can take 12 hours. And so, you know, does that mean that, say, for example, if we're, I'll be drawing a lot of parallels, I think, with Charlottesville, just because we have so many American listeners to you know, give a sense of what to expect. So does that mean, like, within the month before you know, a planned protest at Charlottesville that's legal, that they can go within 20 kilometers of the train station, the airport, and everything else that's nearby, and check people who they think are suspicious and detain them for 12 hours without a judge's intervention, right? You know, these are things that are possible under this law, and that there is no recourse to a judge to, you know, say this is right or wrong. This all goes to the prefect of police. So the basically a prefecture is kind of a smaller region. So whoever is the chief of police for that area, they're the ones who are in charge of this process. Now, the other major aspect of this, that's the perimeters of protection, and I'm just looking through my notes to make sure I've covered everything with that. The other thing is the house arrest. And when I'm reading house arrest rules, I mean, it almost makes me, I've never seen the movie District 9, but it kind of sounds like the description I read of it, where it's like there's these areas that are set aside, like basically techno ghettos where people can't get out of, and they're being constantly monitored and watched. So basically now one of the good things that moving in the right direction is that a magistrate is now required to approve someone being given this kind of designation. Now it's house arrest is not just you're stuck in your house. A house arrest is that you can be put in any perimeter that's smaller than the size of a commune. So that would mean a small city would be a commune, a collection of very small towns, or in the case of Paris, an arrondissement. There are 20 arrondissements. Each one of these would be a commune. So you might be stuck in your own arrondissement or in one of the, you know, this, and most likely if we're talking about Islamists, you know, you're going to be talking about one of the arrondissements in the east of Paris, which is where the Kouachi brothers grew up, or you're talking about one of the, you know, Saint-Ouen, Saint-Denis, one of these communities north of Paris, just outside of the city limits. Now, they'll wear a leg bracelet, or they check in with the police each day. And obviously, a leg bracelet, if you're talking about a serious threat, you know, is a much better way to keep track of them. They now, this law gives them the right to all mobile phone data of a person who is given this designation between now and the year 2020. All suspected persons, now it's not guilty persons, suspected persons must give the police their usernames to all of their online IDs, so email, Twitter account, Facebook account, etc. And I imagine if you don't give over everything that this would be obstruction of justice. So if you forget that you once set up a OkCupid site, you know, 5 years ago, are you guilty of obstruction of justice? Maybe under this law. This is the, now I've read two different accounts, and the law is, it's been passed by the Assembly and passed by the Senate in slightly different versions. And right now they're in the process of agreeing on, you know, where there are differences, what they're going to do. And I've read two different things of whether or not passwords have to also be provided to the police. So that's, I'm not sure. I know for sure that usernames will be provided, and it's unclear whether passwords must be provided or not.
Right.
Now, one rule that's been changed is that they can do a what they call visits and referrals, which is kind of a soft way of describing it. You know, that is where the police can show up at the house, have a look around, and take things with them if they wish. If they wish, basically.
Computers, and it's, right? Those kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not, and the thing is, it's not defined. So, I mean, obviously, computers would make sense, or, you know, it's like, hey, you live in the middle of the city. Why do you have so much hydrogen peroxide or so much, you know, what is that, the potassium nitrate or whatever the fertilizer is? Is there something weird? Obviously, you want them taking that away. And that's between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. They can stop by the house. So that's been limited. And again, I mean, that's, if you're keeping people safe from real terrorists, you know, maybe you don't want that in place. Maybe it should have been a bit harsher than that, right? But that's where the law is now. They've actually, I think that's one of the ways in which they've weakened the legislation. And that's the interesting thing about this, is that in certain areas they've weakened the legislation, and in certain areas they've strengthened it, like keeping people detained for 12 hours straight. And then finally, like you mentioned earlier, that's the ability to shut down houses of worship. And we'll get into why they say houses of worship and not mosques shortly. But
yeah, houses of worship. That's an interesting definition right there. Because anyway, go on with that first. But that's an important point, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So houses of worship can be shut down. They will be shut down within 48 hours of the announcement being made. There's a short period of time in which that 48 hours in which a rebuttal or some kind of judicial maneuver to try and stop the government from doing this can be done in a 48-hour window. And if it's not successful, the house of worship shut down for 6 months. And anyone trying to recreate that same house of worship can go to jail for 3 years and have a $45,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what will constitute the right of the government, or the right of the police force, to shut down the house of worship? So that means that it's initiated by the police, and only if proper judicial steps are taken by the house of worship can it be stopped. It's not something that the police bring first to a judge for the judge to review and then accept, and then it's brought as a warrant would be done, all right, to the people who are under suspicion. Now, writings, statements, as well as ideas and theories, and these words are quoted from the law, are enough to constitute a reason to shut down a house of worship. A simple, and they actually clarified this when asked, a simple hypertext link to a site or a conference or to a work relaying these ideas, meaning ideas that support terrorism, can be justification for a shutdown. And the government the government clarified this distinction here. So this, and then also, what does it constitute a person who can either be sent to house arrest that was described earlier, or that would describe a house of worship to be shut down? Anyone who is a particularly serious threat to security and public order, and or is in relation on a habitual basis with people or organizations linked to terrorism. And so let's give an example of this. So the unfortunate events of Charlottesville, somebody died in relation to a car that was driven, as we're told, is being presented to the court, into a crowd. Now, I think that, you know, Red Ice listeners have dug deeper on this and have learned some of the details of this, but this is what the vast majority of Americans are aware of, and this is the basis of a lot of decisions being made in Virginia courts around this, in cases that are totally unrelated to that event.
Yep.
So people who are in habitual relation to those linked with terror or promoting its ideas. So, you yourself have interviewed Andrew Anglin. Maybe you've interviewed Chris Cantwell as well, or you've certainly talked with people who talk with Chris Cantwell on a regular basis. So is this reason enough to put you under house arrest?
Right. Yeah.
Under French law, it is. And so, you know, that's how intense this is. And you know, because there's no distinction made between what is characterized as a terrorist event there and attacks that are being directed by an actual terrorist organization that has declared war against the government of France, against the people of France as well, and that has continuously done so. And so this is where the problems are, and that's where you see, for example, the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations wrote this letter that you just shared with me, and that's one of their criticisms, which is a criticism that's shared with the nationalist right, is saying, look, you're not defining the term terrorism in this law, and you're not defining who it is that is committing terrorist acts. And so this the scope of this law is enormous. I really think that, I mean, the Patriot Act in the United States really curbed civil liberties in a way that's more related to the Fourth Amendment and the security of your own person, your goods, your information, in a cyber way than anything else. And there were FISA courts set up, and I think there was an emergency provision where if you had to act immediately, you had to get a warrant within 72 hours of beginning surveillance. And I mean, in some ways, these FISA courts seem like a rubber stamp, because I think they've denied five times the right to get to begin surveillance to the authorities mm-hmm. in the United States. I mean, am I to believe that, you know, in 10 years or 15 years or whenever that window of time was I was looking at, that the forces of order only 5 times overstepped their boundaries? I, you know, that's just not the way they function. And, yeah. and we know also from listening to General Hayden, you know, who was the head of the NSA, you know, he said in an interview not so long ago, and he wrote a book and he's doing an interview tour. He said, you know, my job is not to protect civil liberties. My job is to combat a violent extremism, right?
Yeah.
So what he's saying is he has no internal control whatsoever, and he has no thought whatsoever to civil liberties. He's just going to push it as far as he can, and will only stop if he's forced to stop by the judiciary.
Yeah.
Which, of course, I mean, the guy, I mean, I think everyone knows his first duty is to defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. And so, one, maybe that's a separate issue, but one, he's not doing job one, which is that. Two, it gives us a snapshot of how they're thinking. And so we can assume the FISA courts are kind of a rubber stamp. But when we start talking about detaining people for 12 hours at a time, just because of a police officer's suspicion, when we start talking about assigning these bracelets that keep people confined essentially to their own ghetto and dropping in at any time, and it's only because of their guilt by association, when there's no real specified link to what kind of acts we're concerned about, that we have to worry about this being overstepped. And so,
yeah.
You know, my background is not policy, right? I've never worked in creating policy. I have worked in political strategy, corporate strategy, and so on, things dealing with this. And so one of my questions that I ask when I see this is, okay, this is, you know, these issues are fairly non-controversial in France. 57% of the public wants this law to pass. And there's been no serious opposition to the renewal of the state of emergency each time it's been renewed these past 2 years. So why pass the law and why now? Mm-hmm. And my thought is, one is it's happening right in the middle of a very controversial labor law reform being passed mm-hmm. that I described on a Countercurrents podcast of a week ago that I recorded with Greg Johnson. And so it's kind of slipping in under this other thing because it passes so quickly. I mean, it's a matter of a couple weeks that it passes in both the Senate and the Assembly, and it's being agreed upon between the two. And so that's, you know, why now and why pass it? Well, I think it's being passed because what is legitimate now in the eyes of the public may not be legitimate in the near future, depending on what they wish to do with this law. So mm-hmm. Francois Hollande has been fairly judicious in what he's done. You know, I've lots of criticisms for the guy. I'm really glad he's not the president anymore. But he was very cautious in his use, perhaps too cautious in his use of this law. And in fact, these laws in the state of emergency have not stopped quite a few terrorist attacks. You know,
that's
maybe
right. Yep.
Certain provisions have helped protect some. You know, the day that Marine Le Pen gave her speech in Marseille, for example, there are these two guys right next to the train station who were planning something for that day, who had the means to create violence, and they were arrested in the early hours. You know, maybe it's certain provisions of this law that made that possible. Maybe there are others we don't know about. But yeah, I mean, there's still been so many attacks. My thought is that he will, one of two, I think one thing will certainly happen. And the other thing I'm very concerned about happening. One thing is that the number of these jihadists in France will climb very quickly in the very near future because, ISIS is going to lose. ISIS is on the way to losing. They've lost their financial support. They've lost the training that they were getting in Jordan from the CIA. They've lost the funnel of weapons coming in. You know, the Manbij, which is the a very important place that the Kurds just took, essentially that operation where they lost many, many people, cut off the direct link, where Turkey could just walk guns across the border into the hands of ISIS.
Yeah.
You know, that's you know, basically the days are numbered for them. And we know that there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people with French nationalism, right, or French nationality, right, French papers, who have the right to return to France, who are there, you know, mass murdering people, torturing and mutilating people, taking women as sex slaves, auctioning women off as sex slaves, you know, all these things, you know, doing this while on, you know, speed and meth and all these things to keep them up and active. And they're about to come back home. And what are they going to do when they come back home?
Yeah.
I think they're only going to bring more violence and chaos.
Yeah. So I heard a general talking about that. He called it a starburst event that to a certain extent, it was actually a mistake to attack them in the way that they have, because it kept them confined in one area. People knew where they were. If you go after them militarily, like they've done now, they're just going to shatter all over the place, right? And go into other countries. And primarily, as you say, I mean, if the many of these people already have citizenships to European countries or America even, they will go there, right?
You're absolutely right. You know, I think that it's hard for me to say that it shouldn't be done. You know, I think that it just is, it's a necessary evil that, you know, ISIS was allowed to be created, was allowed to flourish and attract so many fighters, and it just has to be destroyed. And even if destroying it, you know, means that there are going to be other problems before it can be totally rooted out, I'm still all for it. And ultimately, we're fighting an ideology, and therein lies some of the problem with this law and the approach of the oligarchy, is that they don't want to fight the ideology.
That's right.
They want to fight violent extremism. They don't want to fight Wahhabism or Salafism. And as long as we're not actually fighting the enemy, as long as we're not actually fighting on the correct front, we're not going to really ever have victory over this problem.
And here's the other thing, Patrick, I always want to squeeze this in here. Mm-hmm. In this regard, I don't think they want to have that solution. They don't want to offer us that yet, because as you say, I mean, the EU elite, together with the French government, the elite, the oligarchy, as you're talking about, they have obviously been using Muslims for their own agenda. You have the replacement agenda, of course, but then you have this issue as well, to get the French people to the point where they say, basically, to the state, to the government, you have to do something. You have to keep us safe, right? And so the solution is not, again, to secure your borders and kick out the people who have committed these crimes and really look out for others. It's to enforce this eventually, I believe, on the entire population, where you can have small events, like, as you said, the Charlottesville-esque event, that swiftly changed the definition of what is deemed to be terrorism, for example. You have the interpretation on top of this, which is tricky too. But basically, they could expand this at any moment. And I was interested in that term too, the houses of worship. Okay, well, that might be what they use for now, right? But in the future, as you say, this could be anyone who they deem to be basically a terrorist, any group, any association, any ideas, any theories, any thoughts. Anyone committing in wrong think, right? They can be they can go after them with these legal measures, and that should scare the wits out of anyone, no matter if they're on the right or left, right?
You're absolutely right, and so I'll go over some of the things that were cut out of the law that have been proposed by other parties. You know, the second center right party said that they want to keep in or want to add in the expulsion of all foreigners who are guilty of the reconstitution of a Salafist clandestine mosque. Now, that's been removed, one, because any mention of a particular religion, this current government does not want. And the other thing is, they're sending them to jail for 3 years and fining them for $45,000, so they feel that they're doing enough already, that they shouldn't just kick people out if they're not citizens. But what happens when a Salafist imam or the members of a Salafist mosque go to prison? We know the answer to that. They start converting. I mean, they have unlimited access and tons of time to interact with disenchanted young men of Arab and African origin, overwhelmingly in French prisons, who are already prone to violence. And, you know, and just as with the with Koulibaly, who shot up the kosher market, just as with the Kouachi brothers, you know, this is where the radicalization process occurs. Mohammed Merah as well. I mean, this is where the radicalization process occurs. And so You know, so instead of kicking them out of the country and making them the problem of the government of Morocco or Algeria, who, frankly, I think have a better sense of how to deal with these people.
Is that just stupidity, or do they literally want to put them in jail? Does this expand their ability to put people in jail so that they will, you know, go in this direction and become more extremists? Do you think that there's a
multiply themselves. Yeah, they'll go in and they'll multiply themselves. I mean, we have to ask that question because the data is there. You know, this is not a mystery anymore. What happens when you put Salafists in jail who are already leading organizations? We know exactly what happens. And so, you know, we have to assume that they have these intentions as well. If they're doing this when we know what the results are going to be, and that their number one goal is not the protection of the country and is not to defeat this Islamist menace.
So this in turn kind of is a feedback loop, right? Because the more extreme elements you have within the country, when they get out, they perform more terrorism, which gives more rights to the government to clamp down on these people, which, you know, it just snowballs out of control, right?
It's almost worse to put them in jail than leave the thing open, because how many young thugs will just randomly stop in to pray at a mosque, you know, like, you know, it's harder for them to put out their net to catch young men outside than inside of jail. And so and on top of that, they can say, I'm here for being a Muslim. I'm here, I'm a victim of Islamophobia because I haven't actually committed a crime. All I did was run a place where we talk about the Quran and we talk about how our people are being victimized. And that was and that stuff is very appealing. The victim narrative is very powerful.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about, whether we're talking about Islamists, whether we're talking about Antifa, whether we're talking about the State of Israel and Zionism, you know, when you give people that victim mentality, and when they stop believing in the cycle of violence, they start believing that one group is only to blame and one group is blameless, then the lid is taken off of what they can ethically and morally do,
and that's a good point.
It always ends up horribly.
Yeah.
Now, the most recent stabbing in Marseille of these two ladies at the train station. So there was that guy who did it was actually already stopped, and it was found that he was in France illegally. And there are no detention centers set up to take these illegal immigrants, let alone people who are suspected of links to terrorism. No detention centers to hold them until their file is processed and they are either sent back to the country of origin or whatever. And so if such detention centers existed, this man would have been in jail and those two women would still be alive today. That was something that the center-right party as well as the nationalists proposed and was cut out of this legislation. That's really pretty sick. I mean, we can let that sink in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really quite horrible.
Yeah.
Now, one other aspect that was proposed and cut out was the automatic expulsion of people who are not French citizens, who are in the files of the security services as being extremists, Islamic extremists. And there's it's really a FSPRT. It's really a horrible title. It's like the files for the treatment and of signaling the prevention and the radicalization of people of the terroristic character, let's say, terrorist-like people, right?
Right.
Anyway, that's this file, right? And there are 16,000 to 18,000 people on the territory of France who have such a file. 15% of them actually are not citizens. And so the proposal of the FN in the last election, the Front National, Marine Le Pen's party, was that, look, if you know, they have no right to be here. They're here as a courtesy. They're guests of this country. And if they're a problem, we should just get rid of them right away, you know, and like not wait around with this. Now, this is where there are lots of, let's say, crossovers between the far right and the far left and on economic policy, on a number of other things. And this is one area where they really strongly diverge and where I think that people who, you know, who are kind of deciding between the two should really take a look at this and say, okay, it looks like, you know, the Front National is the way to go. One of the members of parliament from the far left party run by Jean-Luc Mélenchon. He said that you're proposing to expel someone without judgment. This is a foolish logic, a crazy logic, and it is an ideological victory for ISIS. And when I read that, I thought, my God, this guy is channeling George W. Bush here, you know, that they hate us for our freedoms, that, you know, that they would actually like, that actually it's a victory for ISIS when this happens because they hate our freedoms and they succeeded in taking the freedoms away, you know. that doesn't enter in their equation at all. I mean, one thing that they definitely hate us for is they despise us for being weak.
Yeah.
They despise us for our decadence. And this is what, frankly, wins over a lot of these young men and young women as well, is that the decadence, the licentiousness, the emptiness of Western culture today is, you know, they feel like they're watching a rotting corpse. And so why would they acculturate themselves to the culture of the West when there's something that's dynamic, that's rooted, that is, that's not in this spirit of decay, the alternative.
That's true.
So many of them will still turn to that. Yeah. So things that the FN are proposing that are not mentioned at all in the center rights. And I, also, this is actually something that this first one is something the Human Rights Commission at the UN says, that, look, you guys are failing to define what is terrorism, what is terroristic threats, what are, all these things have to be defined. They want to classify, the Front National does, terrorist acts as acts of war. There might be a very base monetary reason, right, that people are not doing this, and that is that most insurance contracts exclude acts of war. This was a big fight when the Twin Towers were taken down. George W. Bush said, you know, this was an act of war. And then, you know, Silverstein was like, oh, my God, don't say that.
That's
you
right.
Know, because immediately the insurance company said, oh, act of war. Looks like this one's on you, Shell. You know, this Mr. Silverstein. You know, this, we don't have to pay for
my
this.
Shekels. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, then they immediately clarified it was a statement, it was a you know form of speech and so on. Now, that means that if, you know, the Bataclan Theater, that, you know, whatever happens to them in terms of civil suits, which are obviously less than they are in the United States, but still serious, whatever happens to them in terms of, you know, damage to the property would be all on the owners of that rather than on the insurance that they,
that's interesting.
They've been paying
for. That is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't think that's the only reason why. I think there's also overall kind of, you know, extreme willingness to lie to themselves in the oligarchy that we're not actually in a war with these people.
Yeah.
That this is a criminal problem, not a an actual war. The FN also said that we must dedicate ourselves to the destruction of Islamist ideology and all of its manifestations, wherever it's found. That's never going to be in the law. Immigration moratorium, which is has really been her calling card and really should be her focus. And I kind of went into this a bit in the this last podcast in Countercurrents, that there was a departure of a senior advisor to her who was very eager to talk about monetary issues and not talk about identity issues and the invasion of Europe and so on. I mean, that's really her needs to be her number one issue. And it's the number one issue of so many people in Europe. Passing an immigration moratorium as possible with a referendum run by a president. The immediate expulsion of everyone, as we mentioned, who has this, who's been noted by the authorities as being extremists, and eliminating dual national dual nationality. And then finally, let's see, I guess that's all of them. That's all of her proposals there.
Right.
And so the in the press in France, you know, unfortunately, President Macron looks like a big winner because he can go to the public and say, well, look, I've got extremists on the left. I've got extremists on the right. Here I am, the great arbitrator with my you know, huge victory in the assembly, bringing together the best ideas of all to keep us safe and also keep our liberties safe. And there is very little room for opposition in terms of getting the main main story across. So, yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, why pass this law when there's so much support for the state of emergency that people accept it. And once again, we go back to the fact that if they're going to be doing something unpopular with these laws, then they have every reason in the world to get this written down on the books immediately. Mm-hmm. Because it's so much harder. The way you stop it now is every few months you put pressure on the president or you complain in the media, and by an act of omission, it goes away. But once it's on the books, then you need to have brave parliamentarians, which are always in short supply, who are willing to take the responsibility that if they retract any of these laws and an attack occurs, then their opposition can say, well, this happened because, yeah. And so their political lifespan suddenly drops. So that gives these provisions a much longer lifespan themselves, despite, you know, regardless of what's done with them. And so I think that he's really giving himself the power to not only go after the dispersal, the diaspora of ISIS that is coming probably in mid-2018. And he's also giving himself a green light to start taking out his biggest ideological rival. And his biggest ideological rival is not the center right. It's not the center left. And it's not even the far left. It's the Nationalist Party, the Front National. Nationalism is the, you know, essentially all across Europe, that is the opposition party.
That's right.
That is the only intellectual opposition to the powers in place. And so this will allow him to eliminate that competition and to have all, I mean, people are already thrown in jail on a regular basis or fined tens of thousands of dollars at a time for saying the wrong thing, for saying that, things as basic as, well, you know, the reason why police stop young black and Arab men more is because they're more often involved in drug trafficking.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like, you know, statements of fact, and people have been fined tens of thousands of dollars for saying statements of fact. I may be wrong about this, but I think the ad that in Sweden that was put up where you had pensioners with walkers going after a check or money or something like this were being beaten out by women in niqabs with the full body veils pushing strollers. Right. Weren't they punished for doing this?
I believe you're right. I have to look into this and be reminded again of that particular one that you're talking about. But I would not be surprised, you know, because I've been thinking, Patrick, you know, how close are we to some of these current ruling parties actually going after their rivaling parties, the nationalist parties, and actually declaring their opinions and their thoughts as kind of a terrorist. It begins, of course, with hate speech and these kinds of things, but eventually they might have the legal framework to call this terror, and there's just no stopping what they can do at that point to shut down the opposition, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, the fact is that it's just always a risk in this world, maybe a bigger risk in America than Europe, but you know, that someone who's been sitting in their basement taking, psychoactive drugs that were prescribed by, you know, the advice of their teacher who didn't want to put up with them for years on end, putting themselves into a trance, playing first-person shooter games, if they put on the wrong kind of t-shirt or a t-shirt that matches one of ours, and then they go out and do something horrible, that suddenly, you know, the rest of us are blamed by guilt by association, even if we explicitly reject these kinds of violent acts.
Yeah.
And so every political movement has, I mean, even like, I mean, the guy who shot Representative Scalise, I mean, his letters to the editor, I mean, they were not crazy screeds. They could have been written by Paul Krugman at the New York Times, you know, it's like,
right.
It was all about how many tax brackets exist, you know,
yeah.
It was like, it was really dry analysis. And then, but, you know, because this is an idea that is not outside of the accepted mainstream, Paul Krugman doesn't have to answer tough questions on Rachel Maddow's show or on, you know, or on the Sunday morning shows, right?
Yeah.
But that's the problem is, and I mean, I'm not going to, you know, we can't complain that we're in an unfair system. We just have to accept it and struggle harder.
It.
But,
yep.
But you know, that's the thing is that for us, if something like this happens, we will be immediately blamed, and they will not only blame they won't even have the dignity to say invite you on a show to discuss and have a fair debate. They will shut down, they will hack your site, you know, with the support maybe of government entities, maybe not. They will shut down your ability to receive payments on PayPal. They will shut off your ability to communicate on Facebook. And for people who make their living off of their words and off of bringing information to the public, once the ability to take the information to the public is taken away, once the ability to receive payments from their grateful members is taken away, they've snuffed out that discussion. And they totally cut it off.
Yep.
I have to say, you know, I want to send out a gratitude to those people who have remained members through the tough times that Red Ice has faced, because
definitely.
You know, they sign up with the thought, okay, I'm going to get a certain service, and now they're not getting it, but they accept and understand the fact that this is bigger than, you know, buying a coffee down at the nearby cafe or something, you know.
Yeah.
This is way bigger than a normal commercial transaction. We're actually in a fight for the future. And so, you know, they're continuing to support Red Ice. Countercurrents has gone. Countercurrents was cut off of Amazon. Countercurrents was cut off of PayPal. And, you know, thank God so many of their supporters have stepped up and said, you know, you are so important. We need you now. We're going to send you, you know, support and by other means that are more difficult to get the money to you, but we're going to do it because we want you to survive. So, you know, I just want to say I'm very great. You know, I'm not a Red Ice employee and I'm not a Countercurrents employee, but I'm very grateful because, I mean, we need you guys for a better future. We can't have a better future if they're without voices out there and without access to information that Red Ice provides and the Countercurrents provides. And so thank you so much to the members, and for those who are not already supporting, you know, please do throw your support their way because
thank
they
you.
Can very, very gratefully use it. And we'll be grateful that they've used it.
They're awesome. And you just wanted to mention very quickly, Patrick, that, you know, there, of course, I think people know what's at stake here, that this incredible push that's set in, obviously, let's pinpoint this, after Charlottesville. That's really when this kicked into high gear. And it's interesting that this development, it's tangentially related in other European countries as well, in the sense that they can go after people. And I mean, this is a, I wonder if there's anything we can do to also appeal to, you know, not only the left, but even people on the center. That's like the old edict that, hey, you know, listen, when they start going after people on the right, you might be in agreement with that, but eventually they're gonna take away on the left, and then more on the right, then more on the left, and we're gonna be in this intensely narrow, politically correct, you know, opinion corridor where you slightly just deviate from this norm of opinion, you can literally be like put in jail for those things. I mean, this is it's a scary future that we are looking at here. I feel I can't communicate like what it is that's coming.
It's very, very serious what we're facing.
Yeah.
Very, very serious. Yeah. I want to mention before I forget about the end of ISIS that I did, and I should mention the title specifically, because it's been banned on, or a shadow banned. It's very, very difficult to find. But I did a podcast with Greg Johnson on the end of ISIS and on why I think that end is coming, and on the Qatar diplomatic row that hasn't got a lot of press in the United States that might have kind of passed by people without noticing, but it's very important development. And, you know, I think that the states is a very slow thing to change, and even more so a coalition of states. When we first talked about, I think our beginnings of our discussions on terrorism were with the attack on Charlie Hebdo in January 2015.
That's right. Yeah.
We spoke again in 2015 after the Bataclan attack, and that was the beginning of this state of emergency. And at that time, I think that the Obama administration had already shifted away from promoting any policy that ends in active support of ISIS. But they hadn't made the grown-up decision to say, you know, we can't have everything we want, and that means we can't choose the president of Syria. We have to accept that Bashar al-Assad is the president of Syria, that there's going to be this multi-sectarian government, and that that's the only option that also ends in the end of ISIS. and they were trying to play both sides. You know, they were supporting airstrikes, which were, I mean, often horrendously sloppy, but they were supporting airstrikes that were supporting the YPG, the Kurdish forces, but at the same time doing things that were trying to get rid of Assad. And I think that with Trump over the summer, despite his attack, you know, his air attack on this air base in Syria, which really made no sense other than winning a couple weeks of good press, that he has sent the message around the world that for sure this is coming to an end. So that they are firmly in the camp of getting rid of ISIS.
The storm is coming, is that it?
Oh, even before that, I'm not sure what the storm is coming was referring to, but even before that, I think it was the visit to Saudi Arabia, the visit to France on the 14th of July, which is the national day of France, Bastille Day. I think that at that time, you know, word was going out, agreements were being made, and so on. And that's covered. It's called the Qatar Connection, Q-A-T-A-R, Qatar Connection. And it's on, and also they can find it directly on Countercurrents, counter-currents.com. But back to your earlier question about reaching out to people in the center and beyond, I think that's absolutely what we have to do. I think that there was I'd love to be able to talk with us about you at greater length, but you know, I think that overall Charlottesville was a step in the right direction, ever so small, but still a step in the right direction. And I think we have to only expect small steps from single events. And that step for me was that the president made a moral equivalency between Antifa and alt-right. I don't feel that there's moral equivalency. I think that we're right and they're wrong.
Of course,
right?
Yeah, of course.
but in the mind of the now, when the president said this, immediately 45% of the country followed him, at least that far, if not further.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a huge step.
That
in
is
the
a
right
big
direction.
Thing. That is a big thing.
And
I
he
was
did it
surprised by that
after. Yeah, and he did it after the death of Heather Heyer.
Yeah.
So, and that was incredibly courageous of him to do. And I think that he was, in his gut, he is a civic nationalist. I think, we talk about this all the time. In his gut, he's a civic nationalist. And so, you know, getting that's a metapolitical victory that in the mind of the public now, we are just another group. We don't represent this, you know, as I think it was Dennis Wise you had in your show, it's, you know, the dumb representation of evil.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
For half the country, we no longer represent that, right?
Right.
I mean, once again, you know, everyone, if you don't know the archives of Red Ice Radio, they got lots of great stuff. And The Greatest Story Never Told is one of those things to check out that guy's work. But
yeah, indeed.
But now the problem, though, is that after that, I haven't seen any evidence of lawfare beginning. I hope that process does begin because, you know, as everyone knows already, you know, there was a conspiracy. Which is, you know, when more than one person attempts to commit a crime, that's a conspiracy, you know. And so there was more than one person attempting to create a riot in that city. And, you know, they weren't our people. They weren't our guys doing it. It was Terry McAuliffe. It was the mayor of Charlottesville. It was the chief of police. And that needs to come out. There needs to be somebody working on FOIA requests. There needs to be someone, you know, with the law background who has this ability to get this information out, to force them to open their records. And if they're as sloppy with their emails as John Podesta and Hillary Clinton were, then they have undoubtedly left a trail behind for us to follow.
Yeah.
And it's all about, that was all about Terry McAuliffe wanting to be president in 2020.
Interesting.
That's what this event was about.
And then also at the same time, I do also believe that weaved into it, there is an attempt by the mainstream establishment to try to associate this to Trump. In a way, he did walk right into the trap by kind of, he never defended us, but he just said there was basically bad guys on the other side too. That was it, you know?
Yeah.
But that was enough to associate him with everything that, you know, the media had painted, this whole image that they've painted after Charlottesville now was associated to him and try to get him out. It did, again, it hasn't worked, not yet, but it's they're trying very hard.
It was a move in the right direction. Now, one thing I should say is that, you know, we have to have, I think, stricter organizational rules.
Oh, definitely.
Including, and this is already in existence in France, you know, that it's whether you're talking about the Catholics who I've written about or the identitarians I've written about, you know, if they're approached by the press, they will direct you to their media relations person. And unfortunately, Christopher Cantwell, who's, you know, I think he's been a white nationalist for 3 months before this event. And he's obviously very narcissistic. He's a recovering drug addict or an actual drug addict, you know, active drug addict. I don't know. But he's at least an admitted recovering drug addict with financial problems. I mean, he finished the perfect profile. And I think this is why he's being kept in jail, of someone who can be turned. You know, someone who has these weaknesses of character, or these weaknesses that can be exploited, and who can be thrown, you know, be given, have this thrown in his face. Hey, you can be facing decades in prison. And the fact is, I mean, here's the thing: in many United States states, there's the castle doctrine, and that's this old English right that every man's home is his castle. And the castle doctrine, though, when you look at it in detail, and gun magazines specifically have written about this for their readers who are interested in home defense, juries will very regularly find in favor of those who shot intruders in their house. They will not find in favor of people who walked outside of their house in their driveway, confronted somebody trying to steal their car, and shot them out there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the juries will say, why was he looking for trouble? Right.
Mm.
Their attitude changes when it's outside the house. And so, you know, unfortunately, you know, this guy, he gave hours and hours of video proving intent and proving hatred and putting himself in a position where he would have the ability to use violence to execute these intents and act upon these hatreds. And, you know, I that's really a dumb move. I mean, he put himself in a terrible situation. Either if he walks without a jury trial, everyone's going to say, okay, did he turn? And if he goes to a jury trial, they're going to play hours and hours of tape, and he's going to condemn himself with his own words. I mean, it's right. So I think people who, I love comedy. I love, you know, the guys at TRS. I think they do great work. That's, you know, unrelated to Chris Cantwell. But I think there's got to be for people who are becoming activists, they have to decide, am I going to create this kind of content that is ironic and funny and edgy, or am I going to be operational? You know, am I going to be out in the streets? Am I going to be in a leadership role? And, you know, and therefore, you know, facing the risk of going before a jury one day. And they have to make that decision early on and to think to themselves, okay, have I presented the case for white nationalism in a way that I can defend before a jury, that I can defend before a multiracial jury as well, which is what you'll often face, and also advance the cause of white nationalism? And I think you can. I really think you can. And I think that, I mean, that's something that we have to think about. People have to be very, very serious about this, about what we're facing. You know, it's not a game anymore. It never was a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the laws that we're seeing passed in Europe can be the laws in America one day. And the scenarios that I've painted out, how, you know, both you and I have these connections that under French law mean that we could have a bracelet on our ankle and be kept in our neighborhood and have our house be invaded anytime between 6 a.m. and 9 at night and stuff taken out without any recourse to a judge,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That we can be stopped at any moment, that we have to give up all our passwords, our IDs, and everything, and be, that this is what we're facing, and that this is down the road. And if it's not here now, doesn't mean we don't have to act like it's not about to come. You know, we should be anticipating.
Right. I mean, you have to be smart. Closer. Yeah, you have to be smart. And at the same time, of course, I feel we shouldn't. It shouldn't act as a deterrent. I think people also will have. I mean. For some that hear that, they will just like, all right, well, that's it then. I'm out. I'm running in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But they have to also understand what is coming in the opposite end of that, right? That the battle we're involved in, we're looking at an establishment, an elite that literally wants to replace us, right? They literally want to eradicate us. They want us gone. They want to have other people in our place that they feel they can probably who knows what they really think about this, but, you know, they'll be easily, you know, controllable or something. That all of this might just be a large operation, advanced Operation Gladio or something, right? That the authorities have brought in these people to create utter chaos so that they can come in, swoop in and clean up this stuff and then reform and reshape society and the world ultimately in their own image with these kinds of laws and stuff. I don't know, but but I agree with you. We have to be smart. We have to be smart and think about this. We can't just run around and do stuff because it's fun and feels good at that moment, you know?
Right. Yeah, there are two things I think that, you know, I'm going to predict and we can take to the bank. One is that, you know, these things are happening because we are getting closer, ever so closer, to power. And that as we get closer to power, it will get tougher.
That's correct.
The heat will be turned up.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the time that white people on an individual basis can make a separate peace with the system, can, you know, outsmart the system, can be just clever enough, those days are gone. That the last of those people who are able to make a separate peace are watching those deals disappear. And Hillary was actually probably one of those people. And so, yeah, I think that running away is not really an option. It's actually, it's not going to be a separate peace. It's going to be a defeat and a retreat, a retreat into defeat, not a strategic retreat. So
we have to fight back now, because otherwise the longer we wait, the more difficult it will become, because that legal framework will also be in place, you know, at the same time to stop anyone that the liberal world order seems as a threat and as an enemy. And then they will go after people. I mean, this is, they might pose as, you know, these liberals and humanitarian rights and free, you know, an open society and all this kind of stuff now, but they will go after people that they consider to be threat at that order with everything they got. And they won't flinch. Yeah. They literally will torture people, and they will do whatever they feel like to you know, maintain their power and reshape the world in their image. You know.
Well, the fact that the people who drop smart bombs on residential areas, when we know for certain that not all the bombs will go off, the people who, I mean, just that, the people who sign off on so many other atrocities around the world. You know, the United States has killed more people more civilians in Syria than Assad, and they're trying to point the finger at Assad.
Amazing.
I mean, these people have the moral high ground is really an absurdity, and we shouldn't. I mean, this is why I think everyone, you know, after Charlottesville, I thought, my God, everyone needs to reread Greg Johnson's New Right versus Old Right, and everyone needs to reread Vox Day's SJW's Always Lie, I think it's called, because we can never see, we don't have to see the moral high ground. We have it. And so making some kind of stupid statement or allowing people who, you know, just showed up from the manosphere, who were, you know, raping girls in Southeast Asia to dictate, you know, our moral standard, is just not the way to go forward. We have the moral high ground, and we can't allow these people to take over the discourse. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm very, very, again, congratulations to you. Congratulations to your growing family and to everyone else at Red Ice who helped you guys survive this attack. We need you more than ever. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate that. And it's definitely right. So let's wrap up for now, but let's definitely have you back. I know that you're in a squeeze right now. We appreciate you taking the time, talking with us, you know, getting the ability to just connect about the French Patriot Act. But thank you so much, Patrick. You know, keep up the good work. You're just an awesome asset to have. You have a good eye on everything that's happening in France and, of course, the internal ongoings of America as well. So thank you so much. Let's have you back soon, and we'll talk more about Charlottesville, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for staying with us here today. My thanks to Patrick for joining us. He had to run, but of course, there's much more to talk about with this whole situation of what's happening, not only in France, of course, but also in America and the West in general, how the climate and the legal structure is developing. Very, very scary. But guys, we will be back here with more soon. We are working on a lot of new videos. We're going to have a new Weekend Warrior up and running. And of course, we're working, as I said in the beginning, on the new membership website to have that up and finished here as soon as we can. So thank you to everyone who is staying with us, who are sustaining their membership. We can't really do this without you guys. If you weren't there, we would basically have to pack it up right now. This is how much we were hurt during this. And the longer it goes, we just realize how much more work we do have left to do to pull all this together back in shape again, you know. So thank you to everyone who's supporting us. And if you do feel so inclined that you want to help out us further with a donation, you can go to paypal.me/redice and make a contribution there. That will ensure us that we can continue, of course, to stay afloat in the meantime until everything is back in shape and back in order. So thank you so much for your help. But yeah, okay, guys, as I said, much more coming. Stay tuned. Keep your eye on redeyes.tv and also on our YouTube channel. Just search for Red Eyes TV on YouTube and you'll find it. Subscribe there if you haven't already. Subscribe to our RSS feeds and everything else. And yeah, we'll be back in just a few days. Much more coming. Thank you so much. Stay tuned. We will talk to you later. Have a good day.